This is the WOKV Ask the Experts Weekend, discussing things that matter most to you. Local experts answering your questions. Call 855-765-1045. That's 855-765-1045. Now, the Consumer Law Hour with Eddie and Chuck Farah.
Jacksonville, welcome to the Consumer Law Hour, 855-765-1045, the number to call. If you've got legal questions, our legal guru, Mr. Eddie Farah, here to take your calls, 855-765-1045. I'm happy to dole out some guidance, point you in the right direction, or answer any questions that you may have. My name's Scott Young, checking in with you once again. Hope you're having a great Saturday afternoon. Go South Florida Bulls. And Eddie, how you doing today, bud?
It's all good, Scott. Good to be here. Good to be anywhere.
It beats most of the alternatives.
It really does.
Unless you can do astral projection, in which case teach me hell.
So,
what's going on in the wacky world of the law today? What kind of interesting headlines you got for us?
Well, I want to talk about a couple of things. I want to talk about what's going on in Texas with that new abortion law and what's going on legally, because this new law in Texas allows any private citizen who can prove that someone aided or abetted in providing an abortion can sue for like civil damages, like $10,000.
Yeah, it's the $10,000 bounty tattletale law.
Yeah, it's a bounty thing. That's so if you can prove that, you know, someone aided or abetted a person in procuring an abortion, then you can sue that person and you can collect up to $10,000. So it is like a bounty. And so the question came up that, you know, what is the liability of an Uber or Lyft driver who is called to, you know, pick somebody up and take them to a doctor, an abortion clinic, or to a doctor's office? And so this question was posed to Uber and Lyft, and a lot of the drivers were, you know, concerned because they didn't want to get sued. I mean, $10,000 is a lot of money, and they didn't want to get drug into all this. But the drivers, even though the drivers are really not employees of Lyft or Uber, they're independent contractors, Uber and Lyft have stepped in and said, you know, even though they're not employees, we're going to cover all the legal costs of anybody, any of our drivers who may be sued.
So if it hasn't happened yet, you know, it's just a matter of time, because somebody's going to try and cash in on some of that.
Yeah, it's like about, I mean, you can make a living doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You could sue a private individual. I mean, if you knew that, if you knew where these clinics were located, you could trace the vehicles going there. You could run a tag check, find out who owns it, and then sue that person. So it's very easy to make, it'd be a very easy way to make some money. I mean, you got to file a lawsuit and all that. But,
I hope for the sake of it that it's more complicated than that.
If you read it, it's not, because the thing is, there's no insurance. The person you're suing is going to be paying out of their pocket. I mean, there's no, I mean,
right. There's no protection for it.
No protection. So you're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to pursue, but you'll get a judgment. If you get a judgment, it's a lien against their property. They go try to get a mortgage. They got to pay it. So it's an asset. You sue somebody, you got a judgment for $10,000. It's gaining interest every year, and it gives you rights to, like, execute against any property they may have. So, listen, it's a weapon. I mean, it's a big deal, and it's but Uber and Lyft are going to step in and defend any of their drivers who get caught up in that situation. So, see how that works out. We'll see how that law sticks, you know, what happens with that law in general. But if you're an Uber or Lyft driver in Texas, you need not worry at this point.
I know there was controversy as soon as it was announced, and various cages rattled and fists were in the air. And there was, if I can get biblical about it, there was much pulling of hair and gnashing of teeth.
Yeah.
But so far, with the Supreme Court having looked at it and said, you know, now we don't really have a problem with that, it'll be interesting to see them find grounds for action.
Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens, and we'll report back. But another interesting case that came, this was out of Florida. This is a case involving, you've seen these indoor trampoline places of business. And this adult friend took this kid went there, and he was escorted by an adult friend. It wasn't his mother. It was like a friend of the family. And so they get to the trampoline place, and but you know, a lot of these places make you sign a release before right. you can get in. And so the kid was under 18, so he did not have capacity to waive away his rights to a, you know, to a claim in the event that something happened or some negligent act resulted in his injury. So the adult friend, who was not his mother, signed the release, and the kid went in and was severely injured. And so they filed a lawsuit against a trampoline company. And the company stated, well, you know, the adult friend signed a release waiving the rights to pursue a claim.
So the adult friend can't pursue a claim but didn't do anything about the child or the child's parent.
Well, no, the adult friend signed a release on behalf of the child, okay, the adult child.
But did the friend have legal capacity for that?
Now you're thinking like a lawyer, Scott. That's why they lost the case, or the trampoline company was not able to use the release as a shield. The court ruled that the adult friend did not have the authority from the mother to sign the release of claims. So,
see, thinking like a lawyer. You've
been really listening to the consumer lawyer for a long time, man. You're really
thinking like a lawyer. That's how I got the job. It's not just because I was working the shift and the show happened.
No. You got it. I mean, listen, you're right on.
Well, and there's the thing, too, because even assuming that there would be some form of compliance on behalf of the parents, that they would acknowledge the responsibility of this person to be able to make care concerns regarding the health and welfare and safety and well-being of their child. It's one thing if Uncle Bruce or Aunt Judy wants to take the kid to a movie. It's something else if they're experiencing some kind of horrific incident of injury and you waved a paper that said, oh, no, they signed off, you can't sue us. It's not apples to apples on that.
No, it's because of the nature of the risk involved in going to a trampoline type recreational. Like you said, you're not going to the movies. And plus, in a movie, they're not going to make you sign a release. I mean, there's a reason why these places are making their parents sign releases before they go in. There's a risk, you know.
Right.
Kids are jumping on them. There's a risk of injury there. Probably a high risk of injury. And this kid was severely injured. And so they were allowed to pursue their claim. And in spite of the fact that a release was signed, because as you said, the adult friend did not have the capacity to sign on behalf of the kid who was under 18 years old. So if the kid had signed it, it would have been invalid also. But so that's how that worked out. And that's a recent case here in Florida. So that's kind of the law as it is today, and it's pretty much the law in the state of Florida. So, I mean, if the parent had signed it, it'd have been a totally different story. Should a parent be able to sign away? I mean, the kid's the one who's bearing the brunt of the injury, and Even a parent have the right to sign away a kid's rights to pursue a claim like that? That's always never sat well with me, you know, parents, because you know how it is. You go to these places, the kids are there. Everybody wants to get in. It's like, I mean, you don't have a choice. You either sign the release or your kid goes home and everybody else goes in. So I think parents sometimes are under pressure to sign these releases because they have no other choice.
Right, and there's a level of understanding about the risk involved also, that it may be a minor risk, such as, oh, look, you may jump into that festering pit of pink eye and just, you know, ooh nasty in the little ball pit, as opposed to something like this where you're bouncing around mm-hmm. on a trampoline that's supported by steel bars that can break bones,
yeah.
or that you're climbing a rock wall and you may get 15 or 20 feet up and fall and you know, break your neck or something like that. It's the right to a minor's health.
I know.
Well,
the other thing is, if you look at it from the if you're the business owner and you know that you can get each parent to sign a release of their claims, I mean, there's no accountability. It's like I got a blank check. I don't have to worry about anything. I mean, everybody who comes in has got to sign a release, and
Yeah, welcome to the Long Jump Emporium. We've put in the new razor wire long jump. So if you land on the razor wire, well, sucks to be you. So
yeah, exactly.
Hey, thanks for coming.
Yeah, I tell you, after this case, they're going to probably change the rules to say, okay, if you come with a person who's not your parent, whoever signs has to have legal authority to sign the release. But if you're a business owner, I mean, it's a great deal for you because you escape responsibility if something goes wrong. I mean, you're not going to be responsible. If there's no negligence, you're not going to be responsible for anything.
Right.
I mean, you have to do something wrong.
Even then, in a circumstance like that, would it be enough to have like a waiver letter from a parent or something like that that says, you know, I approve the little Johnny Sunshine can go play on the at the trampoline place, and I waive any risk of liability? Because do they even understand out of a simple letter of expression like that what risks are entailed and what they're waiving in that circumstance? You know, is it something that can be defeated by simple vocabulary and language used, or is it something that entails a certain and explicit understanding of the factors involved?
Well, the releases have to be worded plain and simply where an ordinary person can understand them. And lately, if you look at the cases that have been coming out, the courts have been really upholding these releases. And a lot of people are being foreclosed from going into the courthouse and seeking, a remedy when the landowner or the property owner or the business owner commits an act of negligence that causes injury to somebody. I mean,
wasn't there an issue about
worry about your kid going? I mean, you really got to start looking at that. I know how it is. I mean, everybody's using these releases now. You know that.
Wasn't there an issue about that with one of the restaurant playgrounds or something like that? It was several years ago, but I seem to recall there was an issue about that where there was a sign on the door that says, by letting your kid enter this playground area, you're waiving any liability or responsibilities on behalf of the institution. And, somebody fell off the slide and got hurt and
I don't know if that's going to be valid. Typically, it's a written, because you got to prove you saw it. The person saw it and understood it. That's why they get you to sign something in writing. Just having a sign out there. I mean, those kind of signs work on when it's a trespassing issue.
Uh-huh.
There's a Florida statute that talks about where to place signs on your property to warn of a bad dog or to warn trespassers or to advise trespassers. But that's a statute that allows you to do that. But these types of cases, it's got to be in writing. Putting a sign in front of the store is not going to
All right.
do it.
Well, today I learned. We're going to take a quick break. We've got a caller online. Derek, if you'll stay on the phone for me, I will get to you in just a couple minutes, and we'll get you on with Eddie when we come back after this quick break. You're listening to the Consumer Law Hour on 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk. Jacksonville, we're back on the Consumer Law Hour. 855-765-1045, the number to call. 855-765-1045, and that puts you in touch with our legal expert, Mr. Eddie Farah, standing by to take your calls. We're going to go to Derek. He's on the line, and he's got a question about access to a family trust. Derek, you're on the Consumer Law Hour.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Hey, Derek, how you doing?
Pretty good, thanks. My great-grandfather, I was told, because I never met him, and he was in Polk County in Central Florida. I was told he had a lot of land, and it was split up amongst family members, but just not me. So I was wondering, do I still have access to it, or was I ever entitled to some of the land that was divvied up?
Do you know when he passed away?
How would I know? No.
But you have.
I know when his son passed away, which is my grandfather, but I don't know when my great grandfather passed away. I never even met him.
What you could do is go down to Polk. Did your father get any of the land?
No.
And your great grandfather, did your father have brothers and sisters?
One brother. Two brothers. He has two brothers. I'm not sorry about that.
So your father had two brothers.
And one sister.
Okay. Do you have their names?
Yes.
And so your great-grandfather died. He left four children. Okay. What you could do is go to, and you may be able to.
Actually, my grandfather had four children. My great-grandfather I'm not sure how many children he had.
Yeah. You would have to start with the great-grandfather, okay? You'd have to find out. You'd have to go to Polk County, which you could do. I don't know what kind of money you want to spend. If you had the time, you could do it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But you could probably hire an estate lawyer and pay him a limited amount of money to find out, you know, what's out there. Because there could be land that you may be entitled to. Now, of course,
yeah, I can see myself. When I went to Polk County's records, I did see a land trust in my family's name, but I didn't know what it meant.
What do you mean, a land trust?
Yeah, I see when I go to Polk County's like records, like the appraisals or whatever records out for real estate, it has my family's name with the land trust. But I don't know what that entails.
What do you mean your family's name? Like just your grandfather, your great-grandfather's name?
The last name, it just says my last name, right. Land trust.
Land trust, wow.
Yeah.
Does it, I mean, is it like one lot? Yeah. I mean, is it a numerous? Is it a big piece of property? I'm just trying to figure out how many.
Well, that I need to go double check and see because I'm not sure how right. much it was, but it did say land trust.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. There should be a, is there like a, was there a deed attached to it?
I need to take another look.
Yeah, because you could do a title check. You could take, but what you would want to do is go back. I know it's work, but if you went back to your great-grandfather and if you could find out your family tree, that would be the way to do it. But it would start with your great-grandfather and see what was in his name at the time he passed away. You can order a death certificate. I mean, I don't know how long ago he passed away, but, I mean, you should be able to get a death certificate.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And, I mean, you can go online and get that. If you know his name, you can probably you can probably get it online for $10 or something like that. But I would start with that and go to Polk County, look at under his name, and then you can run a title from that land trust to see what happened to that land. I mean, it could be still sitting in the trust for all you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then it's got to be probated. Then you got to probate everything, which means you got to get your, it's got to go from your great grandfather to the grandfather and all his brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And then down to yours, unless there was a will, and maybe the will determined who got what. I mean, the will should have been filed at the probate department in Polk County. Did your great-grandfather die in Polk County?
I presume he did, but I'm not sure.
Okay, well, then did you check with the probate department to see if he had a will?
No, I didn't check that. I'll have to check that.
Yeah. The will should be filed at Polk. It should still be there in Polk County at the probate department. So you go there and say, okay, let me see the will under my great-grandfather's name. And then, if you have the... So your great-grandfather had... Your father, I mean, did your father have a will or anything?
My father's still alive.
Oh, your father's still alive. Okay.
Yeah, he don't have anything.
Okay. Well, you need to go back back through your great-grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
Get the death certificate. Go there and see if there's, if they got a probate, a will on file or a trust. You know, if they have, if there's a trust, they would probably have the trust there also.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
That's what I would do and start from that. But you could hire an attorney who could do a name search and find out if there's any properties out there that belong to your great-grandfather that are still out there. But the problem is if nobody's paying the property taxes on them, then they're gone,
Right. Or they could have been sold, perhaps. I don't know.
Or maybe, maybe another relative grabbed them when they should have, who knows what happened.
Right.
I mean, you've
right.
seen things happen, but you got to start with that.
Gotcha. And then two-part question. I got a niece that got attacked by a dog like a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
How many years in Georgia do they have to?
2 years.
Got attacked by two dogs.
2 years.
In Georgia?
Yeah, you got 2 years in Georgia, 4 years in Florida.
Oh, wow. I guess I'll tell my brother. Yeah. She got attacked by two dogs walking home.
Oh, yeah. You got to make sure they know who the dog owner is, right?
Yeah. She was walking home. Yeah, somebody down the street. They all know each other down there, Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, that's a claim. If she needs, she has any questions, she can call us. We have offices all through Georgia, so we can ask.
He won't listen. They won't listen. I told him.
Well,
I told him. Can't make him go to water.
Yeah, you can't. But a a lot of times you want to get involved as soon as possible, because a lot of these homeowners insurance policies these days have dog bite exclusions.
They'll
exclude certain types of dogs. So, but that's something an attorney can find out for them fairly quickly.
Yeah, I told them. I listened to you guys. I told them to call you guys, but they don't listen.
Well, Derek, I appreciate it, and
thanks.
Yeah, good
thanks
luck on that Lance thing. Thanks
a lot. Bye-bye.
All right, Derek, we appreciate that call. Got to take a quick break. And got a couple more callers in the queue, so we'll come back to them after another quick break here on the Consumer Law Hour on 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk.
The following hour was paid for by the host and does not reflect the opinion of 104.5 WOKV or Cox Media Group.
Jacksonville, we are back on the Consumer Law Hour, 855-765-1045. If you've got legal questions, our legal expert, Mr. Eddie Farah, is standing by from the law firm of Farah & Farah to take that call. Speaking of callers, we've got Marie from Jacksonville, and she's got a question regarding domestic court. Marie, you're on the Consumer Law Hour.
Hey, Marie.
Hi, Eddie. Thank you so much for taking calls from consumers like me. That previous caller that you were referring to, the 15-year-old, prompted my question today about family court and that concept of parental alienation after a high-conflict divorce. And it leads one parent to almost force their child through brainwashing to decide on the visitation schedule with the other parent. You were talking about the legal capacity of a 15-year-old to decide whether or not whatever action to take. And in the case with parental alienation, parents who have such limited financial resources, what would you recommend for an alienated parent who wants to be able to have time with their own child, but the other parent is blocking that and preventing that?
I'm a personal injury lawyer, you know, but I encountered situations like that. I don't know. You could always, depending on your financial situation, depending on, you know, like, again, what kind of funds you have available, the Jacksonville Area Legal Aid does a lot of that type of work, okay? And they have lawyers that'll represent you in a case like that. But there's nothing wrong. I mean, you can't, that, to me, that's something you can do on your own. I mean, you have an open case. Is it here in Duval County? Was the divorce granted in Duval County?
No, this is actually, it's out of state.
Oh, okay.
And there is an attorney by the name of Ashish Joshi.
Right.
And he's published extensively on this phenomenon of parental alienation in high conflict divorces.
I know that, but there's something that can be done about that. I mean, if you can have the child examined by a psychologist to see what's going on, that psychologist can report back to the judge and tell the judge what the other parent is doing, and the judge can take action.
However, the psych eval costs $5,000 per person.
Well,
and alienated parent does not have $15,000.
Right. But
that's the situation what would the recommendation be for a parent who does not have those kinds of funds at their disposal?
Well, I think the court can, let me just kind of get the lay of the land. Is the child living in Florida, or this an out-of-state divorce, and both everybody, I'm assuming you're in Florida, right?
Yes.
Okay. Is the other parent and the child out of Florida? Not in Florida? Okay. So, and the judgment that was entered in the divorce was never brought to Florida and made a Florida judgment. It's pending in another state. Okay, then you got to go up there. Okay, so, but I think you can file something on your own. I mean, have you talked to the legal aid organization in the city where the divorce was granted?
No, okay. I've done legal research on my own. I've networked with other parents in similar situations.
Yeah, but you can file a petition on your own, because a divorce is a court of equity. The court has retaining jurisdiction. It's not like a car accident. Once it's over and the jury comes back, it's done. The court can keep the case. The case stays open. There's nothing to stop you from asking the court for relief on your own. You can file a petition or a motion with the court, make the proper allegations, ask the court, because I know that in Duval County, the judges have resources where they can have, they have people who are appointed by the court that you don't pay for that can have the children examined, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They can do that on their own. You don't have to pay for that. So I'm assuming these out-of-state jurisdictions have the same thing. So you can ask a judge, judge, here's what I, here's what's going on. I don't have the funds to go hire somebody to have, to dig into this. Ask the judge to do it, and he, and he can do it on his own.
Ah, that's a good option.
Yes.
Because I know, I mean, a lot of people do have $15,000 handy, and it's no big deal. But a lot of parents, because of COVID, are really, you know, they're living, you know, hand to mouth every single week. So this is not just, yes, this is my situation, but I've been talking with other parents who they're up against the wall. They want to be able to have time with their own child, and there's no substance abuse issues. There's no domestic violence. There's, these are parents who have nothing to prevent them from having time with their own biological child. And yet, when there's one parent who has more money or more animosity, these children are suffering terribly.
Yeah, but it should not be about the money. And I think, at least the judges in Duval County, don't look at the money. They'll find a way to get things done. There are resources out there to have the child, you know, talked to by someone else and have that person report to the judge. That happens all the time. And I'm sure in other states they have a similar program. That's what I would. That's how you got to start. I would start with the legal aid in that county or in that city, and at trying to get with them, explain to them your financial situation. And if that doesn't work, I would file a petition on my own, and then call. And of course, you're gonna have to go there for the hearing, or maybe you can do it remotely now. I mean, you may not even have to travel. You can probably file the motion. Ask them to
send. Most of these hearings are via Zoom.
I'm sorry. Yeah, you could probably do it by Zoom and then just show up, via Zoom and explain to the judge your dilemma. Here's what I need help with, judge. Here's what's going on. And I don't have the funds to prove it. And I am asking the court to get involved and find out what's going on. That's
very good. That seems like a very reasonable approach.
Yes, because you're right. It costs a lot of money when you start hiring experts and doctors and so forth. Yes, that gets very expensive. But these cases should not be about the money. It should be what's in the best interest of the child.
Right, and that legal capacity, like the prior caller.
Right.
It was a different situation about, playing on the trampoline and whatnot.
Right, right.
15-year-old does not have the legal capacity to make a decision whether or not to spend time with their parent. I'm not an attorney, Eddie, but I would think that would seem to be a reasonable approach.
Yeah. Well, the older the child, I mean, it's my understanding, again, I'm not a family law lawyer, personal injury guy, but it's my understanding the older the child gets, the more deference the judge gives to a lot of their, what they want to do. But again, like you said, if that child, because a 15-year-old can be influenced, as you know, by many things. And if a parent is putting undue influence on that child, the court needs to know about it. Because you have rights as a parent to be with your child. And if they're doing something to stop it, I mean, you got a cause of action. But the case we were talking about before, you know, children under the age of 18 don't have capacity to enter into a legally binding contract. A 15-year-old can't go down the street and sign a contract to purchase a vehicle. Okay, it's a little different because they don't have, they're not 18, so they can't enter into a legal contract. That's what I was talking about.
Makes sense. Thank you so much, Eddie.
Yep. Yeah. Thanks. Good luck, Marie.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for calling in. Yeah, Scott. One thing. Do we have another caller, Scott? I think
got a couple of them in the queue.
Okay. I just wanted to say one thing. Getting back to the estate issue that gentleman, Derek called about. You know what you can do if somebody passes away, let's say you may have a claim against an estate. Let's say somebody dies in Duval County. You may have an interest or a claim. You can file there's a document you can file with the probate court because they may not probate the estate for a year or 2 years. they may not get around to doing it for her. Sometimes there's several years before they get around to probating an estate. But you can file a document with the probate department where once an estate is opened, you're notified of everything. That's the way you protect yourself. But let's go to the next caller.
All right. Next up, we've got Deborah from Jacksonville, and she's got a question about some property concerns. Deborah, you're on the Consumer Law Hour.
Hey, Deborah.
Hey. I have this question. On last Thursday, myself and two of my older sisters, we received a letter from my uncle that lived in Georgia where he hired an attorney. And we received a certified letter Thursday, and the letter was stating that my uncle told the attorney that back in March of 2016, he came here to Jacksonville and discussed the possibility of purchasing a one-acre parcel of land that belonged to my deceased mother. And my sister, the older sister, discussed the possibility of him purchasing that acre. And then he said that in March of 2016, he came back to Jacksonville, gave each one of us a check for $3,000, and that we cashed the checks, and that now he's saying that my uncle that was promised that property shortly thereafter. And as of this date, he has not been conveyed the property. And within 10 days of this letter, my uncle wants two things done: deed him the property or pay him back the money that he, gave us.
Right.
But
right.
That money, and see, that money on those checks that he gave us in the memo, he put land. But that money is for some other land that he sold, that he and my mother had inherited. And then we didn't know that once my mother died that the property would go to him. And he never told us that. So when he sold the property, we always would tell him, well, when you sell your land, sell, my mama's own too. So when he did sell the land, he mentioned he sold the land. And he never told us he sold the land. And then when they went to Georgia to a birthday party, there's a birthday party, he told me he sold the land. He said, I'm going to bring y'all something. I'm going to give y'all something. And
yeah.
So we didn't know what he was talking about. So then he come down with those checks, and give us those checks, And so now he was trying to say that those checks was for this acre of land that my mother had.
Okay.
That he only had got nothing to do with.
Right, right. So there's another piece of property that he's talking about now, correct?
Right, right. It's an acre of land.
Yeah. Okay. So, where in Georgia is this? I mean, is it like?
Well, the attorney he hired is in Jessup, Georgia.
In Jessup.
He lives in Hinesville, Georgia.
Okay. Well, it's not far from here. So I'm thinking you can go up there. First of all, you should go. I mean, unless you signed a document. I mean,
no.
I know in Florida, now I'm not a real estate lawyer, but I know a little bit about Florida real estate. For you to sign a for you to sell property, that you have to have a written contract that you sign. If you don't sign the contract, it's nothing. It means can't.
That's what I thought.
And so if you haven't signed a written contract, then you still have an interest in that acre piece of property unless you sign something. Okay. So, but what you should do is y'all should take a ride up there and go to the county, go to the clerk's office, and look up that piece of property, see whose name it's in.
We are paying the property tax. That acre is still in my mother's name. We never had it probated in our name yet, but they send us the bill, and we are paying the taxes on that acre of land.
I know, but did your mother have a will?
No, she didn't have a will.
Well, then, if upon her death, y'all would get the property, why is he getting the property?
He don't get it. He want it. He want it.
He just wants it. I got it. He wants to.
Yeah, he just want it because all the other property around that acre, he got that. But now he just, he want that. He want to steal that and take that from him.
Right, right. Well, what you want to do, if it's still in your mother's name, what you should do, because you're paying the taxes on it, you should get it probated and have it placed in your name and your your brothers and sisters, your names.
Uh-huh.
You should do that. I mean, you have to right. do a probate. It's going to probably cost you some money. I mean, probably cost you, I don't know, $1,500 or so. But you could have maybe not that much. Yeah, you have to pay a filing fee. But, I mean, it's worth it because you're going to put the property and you're paying the taxes on it. And you want it in your name. And then you can, I mean, if you want to sell it to them, you can. But you should get an appraisal to see what it's worth before you sell it to them.
Yes. So a few years back, we had got it appraised and found out what it was worth. But it's been like 4 years ago we had it appraised.
Yeah, but land is worth, you know what land's worth now with this, you know, how everything is. Everything's high and everything's more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to get another appraisal. But and you know what you could do? You could contact a real estate person and they, for free, you know, if you tell them you want to sell it or, but you can't sell it till you get the probate done. You got to do that. You got to put it in your name, then you can, then you can sign the deed to sell it if you want to sell it. And when you want to sell it, you can just talk to a realtor up there and tell them, look, give me some, you know, what other properties in the area have sold for. If you don't want to pay for an appraisal, you'll get an idea what the property's worth. Or you can go online and look that up.
You right, but I'm just trying to say, you don't have any kind of written document saying that we sold that property here. This letter here is just.
Is it from a lawyer or is it from him?
It's from an attorney he hired in Jessup, Georgia.
Yeah, you ought to just call him and say, listen, we never signed an agreement. This property is in my mother's name and we're going to put it in our name.
No, but you said he's presented checks and that he had sold some property before that he hadn't compensated you for. So these checks should be that restitution, right?
Well, these checks were for another piece of property. He's trying to claim he paid.
So if you've got some documentation about that other transaction, then you can offset those checks against that, and in which case that undermines any standing he's got for any claim anyway.
The lawyer probably doesn't even know that he gave him the checks for a different piece of property.
Right. But he lying trying to say that was for that one acre.
Nino's, well, you want to go back up there and make sure that property is still in y'all's name. I mean, I would do that.
Oh, yeah, it's still in my mother's name because they sent us the tax bill, and we're paying the taxes for it. It's still in my mother's name.
Well, then you should get an attorney up there to probate it and put it in your name because you're not going to be able to sell it until you do that.
Right. But he tried to say he paid us some money for it, but that was for 4 acres down there in Allenhurst, Georgia.
Yeah.
He sold it, and he said, I'm going to give y'all. See, he never told us that once my mother died, the property would automatically pass down to him. And we didn't know that, so we kept telling him when he sell his 4 acres, to sell my mother's 4 acres down there at Allenhurst. So then when he sold it, then when we seen him at a party, he told us he sold it. And he said, I'm going to give y'all something, because he was feeling guilty because he never told us once my mama died that the property would be passed down to him, and we didn't know that.
Yeah, but I don't think it would go to him.
He's feeling guilty, so he thought he would give us a little piece of money, you know, to soothe his conscience.
Right.
Well, for not telling us that the property went to him, and it wouldn't be ours own once she had died.
Yeah, but
that's something we didn't know.
Yeah, but this 1 acre should go to you and your brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Yes, good luck, Deborah.
Thank you.
Just make sure you follow up with the real estate attorney up there and get that probate settled on it.
Yeah, it shouldn't be. I mean, I'm thinking now, if that's the only piece of property, it shouldn't cost that much. There's a streamlined way of doing a probate when there's only one piece of property you're dealing with. Shouldn't cost that much, and that way it's secure in your name. Nobody can touch it.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
All right, Deborah, thanks for calling. Have a great day.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Well, Eddie, we've reached the end of another one.
Yep.
I appreciate the opportunity to sit in with you. Today, I learned some things about real estate law. I learned some things about domestic court. What do we have? We had the family trust issue, the land trust.
You know, this thing about probate, you know, so a lot of times people will probate an estate. I mean, sometimes you don't know that a person passed away, or maybe you know they passed away, but maybe you have a claim against that person's estate. Maybe the person owed you some money. The person who passed away owed you never didn't pay a debt, or they didn't. There's still some legal issues out there that are going on, and what'll happen if once they probate the estate, and they publish it in the paper, they do what they're required to do, they foreclose all these claims that are out there. And so if you're never notified, or you're not, you don't know about it, you could lose, you know, you're out of luck, you know. So what you could do is, if you know someone's passed away, is that you, there's a document, I don't know the name of it, but I, you can talk to a probate lawyer, that you can file that notice with the probate court. And that way, any legal proceeding that happens with that estate, like once an estate is opened, once the will is filed with the probate department, you will be notified of all the legal proceedings going on with that probate.
I'd and imagine the clerk of court's office could probably point you in the right direction on that too.
Yeah, and it's just a one-page document. You file it with the probate court, because a lot of times I've seen estates, they don't get probated until 2 or 3 years after the person passed away. I mean, they just wait. There's just, people just don't do it, you know. Anyway,
good opportunities to follow up. And as always, you know, the principal message here, and hopefully it's the thing that works to Deborah's defense, protect yourself, protect your property. As always, guys, appreciate the opportunity to work with you, Eddie.
We'll,
and looking forward to talking to everybody again next week when the Consumer Law Hour returns next Saturday here on 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk.